Independence Mall at 10:06.
I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. In August 2011, 4,500 former professional football players filed suit against the NFL, accusing the league of deception and denial in how it handled accusations and reports of player concussions and brain trauma. This week, nearly 3 years later, U.S. District Judge Anita Brody in Philadelphia approved a preliminary settlement between the league and the players. Now some 20,000 retired players can vote on the deal that offers some benefits and coverage for their health problems, including ALS, Parkinson's, dementia, and Alzheimer's disease. We'll be talking with former player Bruce Laird and attorney Saul Weiss, part of the legal team that represented the 4,500 players, later in the show. But first, we asked Jeremy Roebuck to join us. He's been covering the story for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where he writes about the federal court, and he joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Jeremy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
So let's go back to Monday when Judge Anita Brody made this decision. This is a preliminary approval of the NFL's second offer. What did Judge Anita Brody actually approve on Monday?
Well, the second offer is very similar to the first, with a few key differences that Judge Brody pointed out as being crucial to, you know, winning over her approval. The primary one was that the NFL agreed to remove an earlier cap on monetary damages that they were willing to pay out to players. Earlier, that had been capped at just over $600 million. Now they're saying, you know, under the guidelines that they have set out, which provide certain payments for certain people with certain conditions, you know, they're willing to pay as much as necessary for the 20,000 or so eligible retirees that may qualify under this program.
So the cap was completely removed then?
Absolutely.
So whatever is decided, that will be the money?
Mm-hmm. Now, the lawyers for the NFL and for the representing the players, they say that they think that earlier figure that included the cap, that they don't think that the damage claims are going to exceed that. They've done extensive actuarial analysis on that, but you know, I think that made the judge more comfortable to say the money's not going to run out.
And what did the NFL, I guess, get out of this deal?
Well, the main thing for the NFL is they get this kind of PR monkey off of their back. I mean, the number of these suits and the proliferation and the number of stories we've seen over the years of players that are suffering from, you know, very serious neurocognitive disorders, it's not been good for them. And then additionally, the threat of protracted litigation with more than 4,500 of their former players that could drag out for years in courts with all the discovery, where you're going to have people researching what executives knew when and what they didn't say publicly about how concussions can play into some of these disorders. That's something that the league executives just didn't want to have to deal with for years and years.
So they don't have to reveal any of these documents or even studies and things that they might have in their archive, so to speak.
Right. I mean, the key to the settlement, or one of the keys to the settlement, is the NFL admits no fault for anything with concussions. And on the flip side of that, we should note that, you know, these cases weren't necessarily a done deal for players. Had the players taken their cases individually to court, they would have had to have proven that their time in the league, concussions that they sustained as players, directly led to them developing these disorders, which, you know, that can be a difficult prospect to draw specifically in court a direct correlation there. Now they don't have to do that, and it's just kind of taken as a given.
Part of the settlement, though, is that the NFL, though, can challenge some of these cases, yes?
Yes. So in exchange for removing this cap that we talked about earlier, the NFL got some concessions out of the players' lawyers, chief among them. Earlier, they were limited to only challenging about 10 damage claims a year. Now they can challenge as many as they want. They've also tightened the restrictions on the qualifications for doctors that can diagnose some of these disorders in players, which I think was important because the NFL, you know, is now worried, okay, there's all this bad press. This could open floodgates here, and so they can, you know, they can control the environment a little bit more, which has led to criticism from some camps.
Yeah, I was going to say, sort of looking at and there are various sides of this particular issue. Is there any sense that players will go for this, or is it just too early in the process?
I think it's a little early to tell. I mean, you know, in talking to some of the former players that are involved in these suits, it's kind of a mixed bag where, you know, there are some, like Kevin Turner, former Eagles player that has been really the face of this disease, of this lawsuit, who's suffering from Lou Gehrig's disease himself. He's saying, look, I don't know how much time I've got left at this point, so anything I can get is great. I think this settlement offers a great deal and everyone should take it. On the flip side, there are some guys that maybe haven't developed such as severe of symptoms, and they're, you know, looking at this saying, well, if I take this now, what happens if I, you know, develop full-blown ALS or Parkinson's disease down the line? Is this really going to, you know, adequately address my needs?
You did interview Kevin Turner. You have talked to Kevin Turner. You were telling me before we went on the air that he sort of can't do that anymore. But what was it like to talk to him?
It was, you know, it's
ALS. Right?
Yes, he has ALS. And when I spoke to him, this was back in early January. It was over the phone. He was, you know, as a part of his condition, he was slurring a little bit. His words had trouble communicating sometimes. And you know, the sad thing was, is he kept apologizing for it. Oh. And you're like, you know, we understand you can't really do anything about it. I tried to interview him again recently and was told by some of his representatives that his condition has worsened even more so, and that it's even more difficult for him to communicate over the phone at this point.
What's your impression of Judge Anita Brody?
You know, I think a lot of the lawyers involved, a lot of the players involved, gave Judge Brody a lot of credit here, because I think going into this, the lawyers and the NFL kind of expected, hey, we carried the heavy lifting here. We're just going to hand this over to a judge. She's going to rubber stamp it and move on. You know, several of the lawyers have said to me that they give Judge Brody a lot of credit for saying, wait, hold up, I want to make sure this is fair for everyone involved. And her chief concern was that $650 million might run out if you're paying out all these payments to 20,000-something players before the end of the 65-year lifespan that this deal was set to set up to last through.
There are, though, critics of this deal, and some of them are players. Some of them are others sort of outside the NFL looking in. What are the critics concerned about?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, the deal sets up different categories. So like a chief, the maximum award for a player would be $5 million, and this would go to a player that's you know, younger than 45, played five or more seasons with the league, and has developed some of the worst neurocognitive disorders that we've been talking about, Parkinson's or ALS here. And it kind of diminishes down from there. So within each of these categories, there are several players that say, well, I don't think this is enough for me, or this values this condition over my condition, which is, you know, equally bad. So you have that complaint. There are other people who have complained that it penalizes the players that actually brought their suits, the ones that forced the NFL to the negotiating table, because, you know, they're going to have to pay attorney's fees. There's nothing in this deal that compensates them for that. And then any other player that just signs up now as a member of the class action suit, you know, may not have to pay extensive attorney's fees, and, you know, they're going to end up with more.
And I was reading, we'll be talking to one of the attorneys in a couple of minutes, but the attorney's fees are large, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah. Part of the deal is 112.5 million for the attorneys that have negotiated this deal. Now, that's not part of, you know, that's not coming out of any compensation that players might receive or anything like that. That was negotiated on the side. You know, there are some that have criticized the attorneys that negotiated the deal, saying, hey, look, you've got an incentive to drive this deal, whether it's the best thing for players or not, now that you've got this $112 million payday out in front of you. So, you know, that's another critique that's out there.
And how many lawyers have been involved? Have you counted up how many lawyers have been involved in this case over the years?
Oh, it's countless. I mean, the negotiations have been led by a small group of attorneys that you know, were put forth, and then within that group, there are two other leaders that have been the lead: Saul Weiss, who's a local attorney
here, will be joining us, yeah.
And Chris Seeger out of New York, and they've been the two that have been kind of the face of the class council. But yes, so within any huge group of attorneys spanning 4,500 players, you're going to have people that are going to disagree with each other and say, well, hey, I don't trust what you're doing, that sort of thing.
One of the other complaints is that the NFL is a multi-billion dollar industry, and whether this settlement really makes them, I guess, pay for the denial that the players say they have been about the problems of concussion and brain injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's another critique that you hear over and over again is, some people think the NFL got off easy here. Which is kind of interesting if you look at that issue. When some of these suits first came out, prior to all of the news coverage that the issue of traumatic brain injuries from concussions has received recently, you know, I feel like there was some reaction from football fans, from the community, oh, these players are just, you know, out to squeeze a little more money out of the league. So it's interesting to see how we've had all this coverage, a lot more research on these disorders, how quickly that's moved into people saying, well, we think the league, you know, has gotten off easy with some of this.
So what was it like, or what has it been like in the courtroom? I mean, this is not a trial necessarily, but at the same time, what was the atmosphere? Who was there? What was presented, I guess, to the judge?
Well, so far, the process has actually been a lot out of the courtroom. You know, these negotiations have been going on behind closed doors. In fact, Judge Brody and the lawyers for both sides, you know, sought a gag order because they didn't want, different leaks coming out harming the process there. So there was an early court hearing, which I personally did not cover, and we're going to have another one coming up in November where people that have objections to this deal that Judge Brody approved can raise their objections. So it should be interesting to see everybody kind of gathered in one courtroom and see how the players react.
And it looks like there is a bit of a time frame. So the 20,000 former players then have to make some kind of decision by November this year about whether they're going to take this or not. Is that sort of the looking forward, the next step?
I'd have to go back and look exactly at the timeline there. But my understanding is that, you know, they have a certain window of time to file objections. There will be this hearing in November, which Judge Brody will hear these objections out, see if that changes her opinion on, you know, whether this is a fair deal, whether to grant final approval or not. And then even say she does grant that final approval, players can say, well, I don't want part of this. I'm going to pursue my own separate lawsuit against the league for these claims.
And there's a chance that there might be some players that would do this separate from the lawsuit then?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in fact, there are some lawyers that have been out there since January saying, my players are going to take this to trial and we think we're going to win. You know, and we raised the counter argument to that earlier where, you take that to court, you've got to prove that you're playing football for the NFL caused this disease that you have now, which is, you know, a little more difficult.
What's this been like for you to cover? Are you a football fan, for instance? Do you follow football?
It's funny. I grew up in Texas, but I am not a huge football fan. So I come at this more from the legal side of things, which has been just as fascinating.
But you had to, I'm assuming, sort of learn
definitely
about this sport called football.
Absolutely. And, talking with a number of these former players has been interesting as well, especially as someone that comes at it not necessarily from a fan perspective, but let's look at this as your job and how this job impacted your life.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about a decision earlier this week. U.S. District Judge Anita Brody here in Philadelphia approved a preliminary settlement between the NFL and players having to do with concussions and help for some of the brain injury that appears to be related to their time on the field. Talking with Jeremy Roebuck, he's been covering this story for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where he writes about the federal court. And we're going to take a very short break. We've got a lawyer waiting in the wings, and we want to hear from you. What do you make of the settlement? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Interested in your thoughts about this settlement and even about the NFL and its handling of concussions. We'll be right back.
Flashpoint Theater supports WHYY and presents Herringbone now through July 27th, starring 10-time Barrymore nominee Ben Dibble. George Herringbone is a unique kind of vaudeville star with the looks, the voice, and the moves. He also has a little help, which is more than he bargained for. Herringbone is a harrowing musical ghost story that explores the true price of fame. Tickets at flashpointtheater.org and 267-997-3312. Flashpoint Theater proudly supports WHYY.
Next time on The Pulse...
That's the alarm.
A drug overdose.
The oxygen level's low.
An antidote.
This is Narcan, 2 doses of Narcan that I carry in my patrol vehicle.
It works quickly.
Watch is going to be like a mummy. And they were dead, weren't breathing. They administered and they sat straight up and asked where they were.
But who is allowed to carry it?
Families looking on, demanding that the officer do something to help, and he's just helpless.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. A quadruple amputee waiting for a double arm transplant turns to comedy.
A therapist came in and said, this experience has been really traumatic. Do you feel depressed about it? I said, yeah, it makes me feel like slitting my wrist. You know, I mean, you have to laugh at these things because otherwise you just weep.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. I've been talking with Jeremy Robuck, who's been covering this case here in Philadelphia. And earlier this week, a federal judge in the city approved a preliminary concussion settlement involving former professional football players and the NFL. Players have claimed that they suffer from brain injuries from hits to the head that they experienced as they played football, leaving them debilitated in many different ways. And joining us now is Saul Weiss. He's an attorney, part of the legal team that represents the 4,500 former players in their suit against the NFL. And Saul Weiss, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Is this a good deal for the players that you represent?
Absolutely. It's going to give peace of mind to the young players, some of them do not have insurance, to be tested so that they and their families can either find out, A, either they have no problems, or B, they start to have problems and they can get some more benefits that way. It's about $3,500 to do a baseline screening. And the second component is for those players who are seriously injured, we're going to get money to them as quick as possible. And that's what it's all about.
And I know this cap was removed. How much do you think this is going to cost the NFL?
You know, our actuaries and economists gave us models. We believe the amount of money before was fine and would have paid players through 65 years. Now there's no worry about that, and the NFL will pay every claim.
You know that the NFL, even though part of this deal is that the NFL can challenge some of these claims.
Well, they can challenge claims. They have a right to audit some claims. And if they get too frisky in what they do, we'll be in court and the judge will decide what's right and what's wrong with regard to the audits.
I'm not familiar with that legal term, too frisky. What do you mean by that?
Well, if the NFL gets too aggressive in challenging claims, and we find there's a pattern of delay, we have a right to go to court, and I'm sure the judge will put an end to it.
The NFL doesn't have to admit wrongdoing. I mean, that's part of the settlement, and their charges that it concealed information, it didn't release, and you know, it doesn't have to release some of these internal documents. Does the NFL get off pretty well from this deal?
You know, anytime somebody pays the amount of money the NFL's paying, you don't have to admit you're wrong. They're doing the right thing. They're making a payment to those players who are really hurt, and they're affording the younger players and other older players who haven't been tested to be tested to see if they have these problems. It's a win-win for both sides.
And are you saying, and I do want to get back to Jeremy Robuck, but are you saying that, let's say a player today just is experiencing some headaches or something, let's say in 10 years they develop Alzheimer's or the signs of ALS, will they be covered under this deal?
Yes, they will. Anybody who gets sick within the next 65 years is eligible for a payment. And these diseases progress as time goes on, and we expect to see a lot more players developing these symptoms and getting the diseases. And when they get diagnosed, they're going to get a payment.
They're going to get a payment.
The settlement. Yep.
Jeremy, you're scribbling something there. I mean, is that from having reported on this, is that your understanding as well?
Sure. And I think, you know, Saul was in the room. He knows the ins and outs of this deal perhaps better than most people. I guess my question to you would be that one thing that we were talking about earlier that I'm not quite clear on is, say a player takes a, you know, pursues a damage claim for something like dementia right now, and you know, he gets his money, and then later on that develops into something you know, more serious down the road. How would that work for a player like that?
That's a good question. So let's assume somebody today has a level 1.5 neurocognitive loss.
What does that mean for our listeners?
Well, they have serious problems, and based upon the testing, the neuropsychological testing that they undergo and a review by a neurologist, their scoring shows, and the scoring is objective, by the way, that they're entitled to a level 1.5 payment. Mm-hmm. And let's assume that payment is $1 million. For example, if they progress and they get worse and they develop more advanced diseases, they'll be a level 2. When they get to a level 2, they'll get the difference between what the level 2 payment is at the time they're diagnosed and what they received as a level 1.5. So they'll get additional money.
Now, you represent all 4,500 players, right?
Yes.
Okay, that was just a question there. So does, assuming this is accepted, so does each and every one of these players then have to go to a doctor, get the test, get their health status reviewed, and then a decision is made on a case-by-case basis?
Let me answer it this way.
Okay.
If any retired football player, and by the way, it's there are 18 or 19,000 of them,
yes,
that are still alive today. If any one player has been previously diagnosed with dementia, they can submit that report to the claims administrator, and the claims administrator may ask for additional information, but may be able to determine they're entitled to a payment based on that alone. So if somebody hasn't been to a doctor, hasn't been diagnosed, when this deal is approved by Judge Brody, then there's a network of physicians,
right,
that we're going to set up that are qualified, that are not aligned with the NFL or the Players Association. And hopefully within 50, 60 miles from the player's home, who will evaluate them. And if they do have these problems and they do get a diagnosis that qualifies them for a payment, the claims administrator will accept that report and make a payment.
Let me reintroduce you. That's Saul Weiss. He's an attorney, part of the legal team that has been representing the 4,500 former NFL players in their suit against the NFL. We've been talking about a judgment or a settlement earlier this week announced in Philadelphia by a federal judge. Also with us, Jeremy Roebuck. He's been covering this case for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we're curious about your response, what you think about this case, this suit. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So some criticisms and concerns have been raised about how much money you and some of the other attorneys have been making in this deal. Our understanding is it's something like $112.5 million paid out in compensation to attorneys. Is that number correct?
That's the amount that can be awarded. Not a single dollar has been paid yet, and there'll have to be a motion filed in front of Judge Brody at the appropriate time, not now, it's way too early, to determine how much money and who will get that money when the judge makes the ruling. So that's way down the road. Right now, our goal is to make sure that the deal works, it's approved, and the players who are sick get paid, and that we get the baseline assessment program running.
Well,
that's our goal.
That's your goal. But let me get back to the money here. But does that seem like a fair amount of money? And how many lawyers are we talking about?
There's a whole bunch of lawyers. probably 11 firms on the steering committee, and a number of lawyers in those firms. There are lawyers who are not on the steering committee who have also done a lot of work.
Let me go back to you, Jeremy, because I know there was some players have filed objections, I guess, to this agreement, feeling that it doesn't necessarily cover everything, and also raising some concerns about some of these lawyers' fees. Is there anything you can add to that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a motion filed by 7 former players last week, I believe, raising some objections. The judge at this point kind of looked at that in her opinion from Monday, saying, okay, we'll hear this out once we get to the proper time, and set that aside. But there, you know, there have been some issues raised, many of them which we discussed earlier. One of the things that I'd like to ask Saul, if that's
sure,
okay,
please do.
You know, there was a sense back in January, when Judge Brody rejected the first proposal, that all that was needed to convince her that this was a good deal was just to show her the actuarial analysis that you and the other members of the steering committee had done, and that would you felt confident that she would be convinced by that. So what can you tell us about when that shifted from just showing her those numbers to, you know, we've had some substantial changes to the current iteration of the deal?
Well, let me say this. The judge did want to make sure that there be enough money to cover all players who were sick for the next 65 years. And so she appointed Perry Galkin as a special master, and the special master did review our models. He also reviewed the NFL's models. We didn't see each other's models. And we worked with Special Master to get him comfortable about what it would take to assure Judge Brody that all players would be paid in the next 65 years. That was a big hurdle the judge wanted to us to overcome when we did. There are two other points. One, the judge was concerned about the release, and the NFL did agree that players could pursue claims against the NCAA or other amateur organizations for injuries that they may have sustained. And we did all that, and there were some tweaks. They're very good. Another change was that the opt-outs can pursue their claims as soon as the judge rules on whether the deal is fair and not wait until the Third Circuit rules. So there were changes that we made to the original deal that was negotiated. And by the way, we did negotiate very hard for a long time with the special master's assistance to get the deal to where it is today.
You feel as if this, what is it, $675 million probably will cover all the claims, but if it goes to $800 million, that's...
If it goes to $800 million, if it goes to a billion, whatever number it is, the NFL is going to make the payments. And by the way, around year 10, the NFL has to make a good faith determination about how much more money will be needed for years 11 through 65. And they're going to set up a Delaware statutory trust and put enough money in that trust so that those claims can be paid. Mm.
Also, Jeremy, part of this deal is some money for research as well, right? Research into...
There's $10 million. That was the original negotiated amount, and they're still there for education and research, absolutely.
And baseline testing as well for players that may not have developed symptoms yet, right?
Well, that's $75 million, mm-hmm. Jeremy. That's a different fund, yes.
Right,
there's
right.
still $75 million for the baseline testing. And that's a very important component because a lot of the younger players do not have health insurance.
Ah.
And these tests will cost about $3,500 to administer and interpret.
So
it's a good benefit.
And I do want to get to a caller, Saul. I'm curious about assuming the players go for this, and the system is put into process. When do you see the people that say they have problems as a result of concussion and brain injury playing football? When do you expect them to receive their compensation?
I would expect that once the deal is approved, hopefully within 6 months, people will get payments. Because it's going to take a couple months to get the claims administrator up and running. The records will have to be submitted to the claims administrator, and they're going to work real quickly to review those and approve those who qualify for payments.
Let me get to, looks like Jim from Morrisville, I should say, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's a really interesting topic. And
good.
I guess I want to play the devil's advocate here, and maybe it's not even that I'm biased, but these guys all knew the risk I played sports. I played football. They knew the risk. There's risk involved in everything we do. I've been in construction my whole life. My knees are shot. My back is shot. I mean, and a lot of these guys, not all of them, were very well paid. So now it seems to me like, oh, well, we had no idea that this was going to happen. We had no idea there was a potential for us to have injury down the line. I think that's baloney. And I think that, no offense to any lawyer, there's a lot of lawyers going to get very, very, very rich off of this. So, you know, I find it a little bit hard to swallow. I have nobody to sue for my injuries, and I've got them for the rest of my life.
Well, Jim,
that's all I have to say.
No, I'm glad you said it. Let me give Saul Weiss a chance to respond to your comments. I'm sure you've heard that before, Saul.
I've heard that more than one occasion. Let me respond this way. Yes, the players knew the risk of getting orthopedic injuries, of having their knees blown out, having really difficult walking and doing a lot of things in their 40s or later on in life. But the NFL hid the risk of closed head injuries, hid the risk of early onset dementia, hid the risk of developing ALS, Parkinson's disease, and in fact, memos were sent to team physicians telling it was safe to let the players go back on the field when they got their bells rung. So it's a little different. I understand where you're coming from. That's one of the hurdles that we have to overcome in this lawsuit. There are other legal problems as well, such as collective bargaining agreement. There's a lot of defenses. That's why this settlement's a good deal for the players.
And that, Jeremy, was part of the original suit, was this players accusing the NFL of denial and deception when it came to studies, reports, allegations of concussion and brain injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's been underlying this whole case the whole time. You know, and I think the caller's opinion there it was something that we talked about earlier, where, you know, a lot of people, you know, that's the issue that they raise in their mind for a lot of fans. And as the research has gone on, as we've seen more examples of, you know, what effect these health issues can have on players later in their lives, some people kind of flip around. Sometimes they don't.
So we have to say goodbye to you in about a minute. But part of the settlement is those reports then will not be made public, the reports that the NFL hid, as you said.
Correct. And this wasn't a case about getting documents. This is a case about getting the seriously injured players paid and get paid promptly and getting testing for the others. And I might also add, this lawsuit has also helped change how football is played in high school and in college. And I can tell you that the game is much safer, and there'll be a lot less head injuries going forward, thank goodness, because of the awareness that the public has now because of this lawsuit.
Well, Saul Weiss, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
You too. He's an attorney.
Take care.
Thank you.
And Saul Weiss, an attorney, part of the legal team that represents the 4,500 former NFL football players in their suit against the NFL. Jeremy Roebuck staying with us for the rest of the hour. He covers federal courts for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And waiting in the wings, we have former NFL player Bruce Laird. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from the new Wells Fargo Propel World American Express card, designed to bring the world within reach for Wells Fargo customers. Details at a local Philadelphia area branch or wellsfargo.com/propel. Wells Fargo, the world is open. Keep exploring.
The new film Boyhood shows a 6-year-old boy and his older sister actually grow up. It's not a documentary, but a fiction film shot over the period of 12 years. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Richard Linklater, who wrote and directed the film. His other movies include Slacker, Dazed and Confused, School of Rock, Before Sunrise, and Bernie. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
the troubles that are never over.
The American government invested untold political capital, and this thing that the police are trying to do over there, it makes no sense to me.
The Northern Ireland troubles come alive in an oral history project that could put U.S.-UK relations on a collision course. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
WHYY's 2014 Youth Media Awards honors the creativity of local students grades 6 through 12. Young producers can submit their videos now in a variety of categories. Learn more at whyy.org/awards.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We are talking about a decision made earlier this week by U.S. District Judge Anita Brody in Philadelphia. She approved a preliminary settlement between the NFL and players who have alleged and charged not just deception and denial, but also wanting coverage for some of the health problems related to their concussions and head hits on the field. And the judge ruled that the retired players can get some of this money, assuming that 20,000 of them vote on the deal. We are talking about all of this with our guest here, Jeremy Roebuck. He's been covering this for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And joining us now is Bruce Laird, a former NFL player. He played 10 years with the Baltimore Colts, 2 years with the San Diego Chargers. He's a longtime advocate for retired football players as founder and president of the nonprofit Fourth and Goal. In his advocacy, he's worked for the NFL Players Association as a player representative, also an officer of the NFLPA's Retired Players Chapter in Baltimore. Bruce Laird, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Are you part of this 4,500 players?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
So what do you think about this deal so far?
Well, so far, it sounds like it's going to be a good thing for the players and their family and loved ones. I think the biggest situation for retired players, and I must talk more about pre-93 guys than the ones that retired after 93, the so-called salary cap era. I think that those gentlemen, and I've lived it here in Baltimore, we've had John Mackey with dementia that went to Alzheimer's and is now deceased. One of my other teammates, Forrest Blue, dementia, Alzheimer's, deceased. And, of course, O.J. Bergantz, who has Parkinson's disease right here in Baltimore. I've lived it. I've seen it. Ralph Wenzel, another older player, and his wife was in a facility here. So I've lived the nightmares of some of these guys as they progress through this, through these terrible diseases. And I think that the big part of this, Marty and Jeremy, is that now that they will have at least an opportunity to have their estates and their loved ones not so much deficited financially by these diseases, if indeed it does happen.
Now, you're part of these pre-93 players. You played with the Baltimore Colts from 1972 to 81, and then 2 years with the Chargers, 82 and 83. Do you feel like you have injuries or even brain injuries as a result of your time on the field?
Well, quite frankly, it's ever since it came to light, ever since the start of the book, The League of Denial, and even before that, when Roger Goodell took over from Paul Tagliabue in his reign, it really concerned myself and my family. That the multiple concussions, these concussions that happened to me and many other of my teammates and opponents, could affect you earlier than most of the population, which is really true in this case, Marty, because quite frankly, as we know, Alzheimer's and dementia is out there across this country and across the world, but I can tell you that our group of men are unlike any others. Everybody knew from high school to college to professional, however long you played, that's what you were doing. There is a set there, and these men are being inflicted and having these things way before the general population. So there's no question in my mind, as a player, a businessman, and a family man, that having multiple concussions, doing what we did, and not being told one thing about it except tape an aspirin to it and shake it off, you'll be okay, and go back in and play, has affected the health down the line of these men.
And that's true for you as well, Bruce?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good. Quite frankly, I'm feeling pretty good right now. And I've had the opportunity through Roger Goodell and the Player Care Foundation and his advocacy for change that I'm able to go in and get checked as much as possible. But does it concern me, Marty? Absolutely it concerns me. And it concerns me because, as the great Joe DiLamalera once told me, we as young men lived our dreams. Mm. And I don't want our family to live the nightmare of not only the financial nightmare, but the emotional and everything else included in that of an early dementia situation. And again, like I said, I mean, we have it right here with O.J. Brigance. ALS, NFL, CFL player, NFL player, came here now working for the Ravens. God bless that he's working for the Ravens and he's taken care of medically and insurance-wise. But again, many others aren't that fortunate. And not that having ALS is fortunate at all. Don't get me wrong. It's a terrible situation. I've seen it. I've been to their homes, and I know it's real.
I do want to get to our callers. Let me go back to you, if I could, Jeremy, because also part of this, the payout, would be also to families of the players as well. That's a piece we haven't really talked about.
Yeah, beneficiaries for, some of the folks, say the former player has passed away for whatever reason, perhaps the neurocognitive disorder that they developed, their beneficiaries would be eligible to collect compensation here as well.
Let me get some callers in. Bruce, we're going to get some callers in on the conversation, including Heidi joining us on Radio Times. And Heidi, go ahead. You are on the air.
Yes. Hi, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just curious about something, and I guess it comes from my own experience. I have both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's early onset in my family. That's my genetics. I've also experienced several severe concussions personally. So if I were to go to a doctor with early onset dementia, mm-hmm. any of those symptoms, how would a doctor know? I guess we're going with the old, you know, what's in your genetics and what did it right. bring out argument, and what is in the lawsuit to cover the players from a doctor saying, well, you are going to get this anyway, it just brought it out.
Yeah.
How do we know whether we were predisposed to getting this anyway, or how do we? Is that base covered in some way? How is this being handled?
And Heidi, hopefully you're dealing with that your own personal situation with your doctor. But Bruce, she does raise a question about whether some people are predisposed to some of these conditions we've been talking about, and how does that get sorted out in this lawsuit?
Well, there you go, and she has an excellent point, and it's just like President Obama and the VA. Let's hope that we are treated a lot better than our own wounded warriors and wounded soldiers that have come back. There is a big point to that. Why is a gentleman like my age in my early 60s, why am I fine
right.
and other players that probably played as long as I have or even shorter than I have are not? I'm not sure how you handle that, but the thing about this entire thing when it comes to baseline and everything else, if it's treated like the disability system, and Jeremy may know a little bit more about this, our disability system, the National Football League, is called basically doctor shopping. I go into some doctor, he says I'm hurt, this is all the things. The disability board sends you to another doctor who says you're not hurt. Then you go to a neutral doctor, and you got to go through this all over again, and you're being chased all over the place. The proof of the pudding in this whole situation will actually be who's handling what neurologist and what type of board is going to be handling this. And we've seen it again as players going through our own system, and it's called the disability system, and it's handled by the CBA, so it's a union and league situation. How will this be determined? Believe me when I tell you, the pre-93 players, there's probably about 50 of us that have played 10 years or more, do not trust anything regarding the CBA and our own union.
Well, that's interesting because we were talking earlier with Saul Weiss. I'm looking at you, Jeremy, because he was talking about the creation of a group of I guess, an approved group of doctors that would look at these. Well, hold on there. Bruce, let me give Jeremy a chance to weigh in on that.
What we hear from Bruce is,
I don't trust him.
Real quick, to address Heidi's question, the question of, you know, how do they differentiate between predisposal or not, you know, that's part of one of the selling points of this deal, is the players do not have to prove whether they were predisposed or whatever. You know, the NFL doesn't want to go through it. Now, to answer your question about the list of doctors, now, I'm not quite clear yet on whether there's a specific actual list or the NFL is setting the qualifications for what doctors would be approved under this, but the NFL has a much stronger say now under this new deal for what sort of doctors could make these diagnoses than they did under the prior deal.
Is that why you're laughing, Bruce?
And Jeremy, let me just interject here. I hope they do a lot better than Elliot Talbot, who they had that wasn't even a neurologist that headed up their concussion seminar and their concussion symposiums for over 10 years. Again, not under Gerard Goodell, but under Paul Tagliabue. You want to talk about a joke. I mean, that's the biggest joke of pre-93 players ever. And understand, there was never a neurologist on staff of a pre-93 football team. You had to go out of network. You had to go out of your trainers and had to go out of your orthopods, even if you wanted to go see a neurologist. Even if you were smart enough or astute enough to realize, hey, if I keep getting knocked out and stuff, that may not be good for me down the road.
Let me get another caller. And Heidi, thanks for the call. We have Patrick joining us from Winmore. Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I'm not really talking directly about the settlement, but more about the issue in general. I'm a lifelong Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And
how dare you, Patrick?
I'm done with football at this point. That thing that Saul Weiss said, where he said there needs to be money there because there are going to be more people who have these injuries, that sounds to me like football is like cigarettes. It's the only thing that, if used as directed, will end up killing you. And I can't be a part of supporting that anymore.
Well, Patrick, let me give Bruce Laird a chance to respond to that, a former NFL player. Are you done with football, Bruce?
Well, no, I'm not done with football. I mean, football's been very, very good to me. The National Football League is my life. I love the league. I really respect, although we have our differences as retired players, I really respect the Commissioner Roger Goodell and Jeffrey Cash for what they've done. They've inherited this. At the end of the day, to answer the caller's question, tackling is the worst I've ever seen it. It's a joke in the National Football League. You see very few form tackles the right way. It is your helmet first, but it's not as a spear. You put your head in the numbers and you slide your hat off and you wrap up with your arms and you hold on and you tackle. Nowadays, it's all about ESPN and the big hits. And it's done not in the professional level. I've talked to many coaches teaching defense in this league, and they have a hard time reteaching these younger players, especially defensive backs and some linebackers, how to tackle correctly. I mean, you have a speedy receiver, you have all these people that can run around, and you're throwing your head at them. I mean, first and foremost, you're never going to tackle them, and secondly, you're going to injure yourself. And this has been a really tough situation for the coaches. Dean Pease, who's our defense coordinator, for the Baltimore Ravens, been in the league a long time. I respect him. He comes from the Bill Belichick. He says the hardest thing is to reteach these young men as they come from the college ranks now, from the college ranks, how to play the game of football and how to tackle correctly.
Well, that's very interesting.
It's a bad situation.
Well, Bruce, hold on to that thought, only because, Jeremy, we heard from Saul Weiss, and you seem to agree with him that this case has at least put football concussions, head injuries, some of these diseases as a result of some of the head injuries out for the public to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, what this suit does for the players is one thing, but just the cultural impact of this suit and how it's generated this discussion over time among fans, you know, that we've heard from Patrick just now,
right,
about, you know, the implications of concussions in this sport, you know, it's really been kind of amazing. I mean, just talking socially, not reporting, but with, you know, parents that have their kids in youth football programs right now. There is genuine concern that you hear, you know, is this a safe thing? Do I want my kids to be doing this if it's done the right way? Perhaps so, some of them think.
Bruce, we're almost out of time here. Yeah, go ahead. Sounds like you want to add something.
Real quickly, if I can. I think it involves everything. It involves skateboarding. It involves hockey, soccer. I think as a mother and father in this generation, if you have a child that's under the age of, say, 21, and they've been multiple concussed, you really have to consider what your plan is for that child down the road. Do you want them doing other things that can cause and let's be honest about it, that can, you know, maybe or maybe not, but a better chance than not that you'll have dementia, Alzheimer's down the road. And I think that is what the NFL is fighting right now, because where do you think that pool of talent comes from? It doesn't come from the minor leagues like baseball. It comes from high school and then college.
That's very interesting. We're used to athletes being millionaires. Bruce Laird, I was reading about, and I know you're laughing because I was reading that you were paid something like, what, $35 a game back in the 70s?
Well, it was actually $50 a game for an exhibition game, and we played mostly all of those 60 minutes. It's amazing that, just so your listeners know, I played 14 years of professional football, and 12 years after I retired, as a businessman, I made more than I ever made as a player. So, I mean, you have to understand there is a demarcation part here. There's the pre-93 player. This is the post-93 player. And the year 2000 and on, if I played today, for example, I would have made $7.5-8 million a year.
Wow.
In my best years, I made $180,000. And everybody can say, that was 30 years ago, inflation, all that. Baloney. Baloney. Give me 3 years as a player today, and I wouldn't be working, I'll tell you that.
Well, Bruce Laird, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank
you for the opportunity for the Fourth and Goal Foundation to speak out on this subject.
Absolutely. He's the president, founder of the Fourth and Goal. Jeremy, thank you very much for joining us as well.
No problem. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jeremy Robach has been covering this suit, this case in federal court here in Philadelphia for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Go to WHYY.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.